The Israel Report with Rolling Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolling Marks, I can hear you typing away. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And you, Howard, don't we just love technology?
Yeah, because when it works magnificently, and when it doesn't, we actually don't know what to do in our world.
For sure.
All right. So it's absolutely brilliant that we've managed to make some sort of a plan. The line isn't as clear as it normally is, but it's pretty good. Rolene, tell us Bannon versus Kushner. It's going to get ugly.
It's going to get ugly, and I think it's going to get epic. As we know, this past weekend, I think following a lot of the controversy surrounding President Trump's comments about the Unite the Right rally and how it's descended into an absolute den of iniquity, to put it mildly, Steve Bannon, on the suggestion, or actually on the recommendation and the plea from many White House staff members, has been summarily dismissed. I think that he possibly was expecting this, because no sooner had he been dismissed from the White House, but he took up his spot back at Breitbart, and he has declared war on what he sees as a long list of enemies across the media and the government, who he believes has stopped him from enacting a nationalist agenda in the Trump administration. Now, Trump himself tweeted that he thinks it's a good thing that Bannon is going back to Breitbart. He said that at least there's somebody out there to challenge the fake news, and perhaps Bannon will be tougher than he was before. But definitely in the crosshairs are Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, and Gary Cohn, who is the head of Trump's National Economic Council. Now, of course, a lot of conspiracy theories or a lot of opinion, because these are three very, very prominent, high-ranking Jewish members of the president's kind of upper echelon. Mm. And it's no secret that Kushner and Bannon clashed, and I think that the Unite the Right rally was the straw that broke the camel's back, because Kushner and Ivanka pushed for President Trump to come out of the gate with very, very, very harsh words, and Bannon kind of made it a little bit more piecemeal, so to speak, that he used language that wasn't as excoriating of the far right that it should have been.
What's interesting to me is that given this context, and given the almost pulling of, if you see it sort of as the image of Trump being pulled in different directions, Kushner on the one side and Bannon on the other side, it now makes sense in terms of Trump's reaction to the Nazi march. Actually makes sense, because you see him saying one thing and then kind of retracting and then saying something else, and we almost see this battle playing out through Trump's statements.
No, absolutely, and I think that possibly the best thing has been for Bannon to leave the White House. Bannon was an issue even through the election. He was very, very closely watched. I know we discussed it ourselves. We said, who is Steve Bannon? Is he an anti-Semite? Isn't he an anti-Semite? And I think it's now got to the point where there has to be a major shake-up in order for the administration to get back on track.
And it is clear to, it does seem clear from what you're saying, that he's actually still leaving on good terms in terms of Trump.
Ooh, yeah. Well, President Trump seems to have him on good terms, but I don't think he's...
Oh gosh, we seem to be having a little bit of difficulty there. Rolene, are you still with us?
I'm still with you. I was carrying on talking.
Well, don't let the fact that we can't hear you stop you, really.
Well, it hasn't stopped me before. It's just interchangeable with the voices in my head. What can I say?
Absolutely. I know that symptom well. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, we were saying that he hasn't seemed to have left on bad terms with the president. I think that the issue is not between him and President Trump, but rather with fellow White House staffers who really, really wanted him out.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out at Breitbart in the press, and anybody, of course, who isn't aware of what that is, it's quite a strongly right-wing paper or publication. Ben Shapiro was involved in there at one stage, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And what is also interesting, what has come out over the last couple of days, is not only is Bannon personally offended by any suggestions that he is anti-Semitic, because he says he often cites his support for Israel as evidence to the contrary. Mm. Having said that, so do a lot of far right. It's actually quite a disturbing phenomenon, and I have a whole story for you, but that's for another show. But also Bannon was behind the efforts to relocate the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and refused to meet with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who referred to as a terrorist. But his final battle has been with Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, and Gary Cohn, who have said that his reaction to Charlottesville was absolutely unacceptable. And to the New York Times, Bannon referred to them as Javanka. He said they are politically naive, they Manhattanites. He called them globalists. And for many, using that kind of jargon puts him into that that arena of, you know, using those anti-Semitic tropes that we know so well. He's also said of Gary Cohn, you can take Gary Cohn out of Wall Street, but you can't take Wall Street out of Gary Cohn. And, you know, this kind of language has not really endeared him.
But
so
surely,
the war of Javanka versus Bannon and Cohn is on.
What's interesting to me is there can be very few political commentators that think that Trump was successful in his handling of the situation over the last few weeks. Even Bannon can't think that the way in which he dealt with it was the correct way. So there's no question that Trump lost a lot of political ground over the story, and it would seem to me that Bannon is to blame.
Well, this is it for sure, because his comments straight out of the gate should have been extremely, extremely harsh, as was the advice of Jared Kushner and of Ivanka. But we know the history that he was very piecemeal, then he got aggressive, then he kind of took a step back. Having said that, I still have to say that I'm in agreement with him, with his assessment, that there are those on the ultra-left that also are violent. Antifa or Antifa, you know, potato, patata, tomato, tomato, however you want to pronounce them, are just as violent. In fact, their roots are in violence. And anti-Semitic, or rather anti-Zionist, as they prefer to promote themselves, as the far right. They're not exactly like them, but they are skidding down the hill in that direction.
Absolutely. Let's just talk about South Africa boycotting, or potentially boycotting, the Africa-Israel Summit in Africa.
Well, you know, I wonder actually what's going on, what certain people are smoking, because there's a major summit scheduled for the end of October in Lome in Togo, and this is the Africa-Israel Summit. I think it's quite exceptional, because not only are ties with Togo very, very new, in fact, they've only really been established within the last year or so, but this is such an opportunity to learn from Israel what kind of technology innovation Israel has that can help the African continent. And you know, we're no strangers, Howard, to the challenges that South Africa is facing with regards to water, agriculture, energy, cybersecurity, and a whole lot. And there is no no expectation that President Zuma will attend the conference, and it has emerged that South Africa is trying to work against Israeli efforts to make inroads on the continent. In fact, it was the story broke in the Citizen last week, and Sean Benfelt, who is the South African ambassador to Lebanon and Syria, he was telling a delegation from of the Popular Conference of Palestinians Abroad, I don't know what organization that is,
and how popular.
That Pretoria will not be taking place or not taking part in the event. He says it's a step to normalize relations between Africa and an occupation state. But the whole thing in order for there to be peace in the region is for normalization to happen.
Yeah, look, South Africa's position is hypocritical at best. There's little doubt, and in fact, I've noticed this over the last couple of years, that our friends at BDS have taken the battle outside of the, away from the aisles at Woolworths, where they clearly lost the battle against Israeli tomatoes, to government, who are so much more easily purchased than it is a tomato. So there's no doubt in my mind that the BDS have gone, they've taken their battle behind the any visible eye, and they are doing such tremendous damage, not to Israel, because the reality is that Israel needs South Africa not at all. South Africa needs Israel. Africa needs Israel. And what's going to be happening, unfortunately, is Israel is going to bring this fantastic, life-altering, innovative technology to the rest of the continent, while South Africa folds its arms and stamps its feet at the behest of the BDS, and South African people will suffer. There's absolutely no doubt what's going to happen. But until they realize that, it's just going to continue.
Well, are they? Because I have a funny feeling that we are going to see people getting very, very, very sick and tired of BDS and their ilk and their efforts.
Just to clarify that, Rolene, South Africans are tired of it. They don't want it at all. And that's why, and BDS have realized that. That's why they've taken the battle away from the South African public. And they've gone to those who are corruptible. And that is certain elements in government. That's unfortunately what they've done, but they've seen the weakness and the ability to corrupt, and that's where they've gone, the BDS. So, yes, South Africans are sick of it. They don't want to be told by a corrupt government about another government that's multiple, many, many thousands of miles away and could actually help to improve their lives. They don't want to know. They're not interested in that battle. But South Africa, the South African government, would rather divert attention away from their own backyard, because it's much easier to do that.
Well, absolutely, but I think that we might see a change in temperature, because we've just had a very successful delegation of a Chavir Knesset who have represented a real microcosm of Israeli society. They've come from the center to the left, including a Chavir Knesset who describes himself as Muslim, Arab, and Palestinian. And they were very, very warmly received. And I know that there was a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of headlines in the press saying that Parliament refused to meet with them. But they met with Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma, and you don't get much higher than that at the moment.
No, sadly not. But fascinating, and we'll keep an eye on that story. The March of the Living organizers have slammed the March for Justice because they've organized an event on Yom Kippur. How liberal of them, isn't that?
Well, this is exactly it. Is that Phyllis Heidemann, who is the head of March of the Living, she's the chief organizer, has lambasted them and said, you know, that by doing this, you have excluded a group of people who are not only being discriminated against greatly at the moment. We only have to look at the visuals, not just in Charlottesville, but that are popping up all over the country. In fact, I digress for a second. Yesterday, when the the countdown began for the solar eclipse, I think it was in Portland in Oregon, there were signs on the highway that were profoundly anti-Semitic. And she said, you've excluded a group of people who traditionally have always campaigned for civil rights, who they themselves have been the target and the victims of discrimination. And they said, you know, we're terribly sorry and we didn't mean to offend, but they haven't changed the date.
And Rolene, what chance is there that they didn't look at a calendar and say, ooh, gosh, that day is a Jewish holiday? I'm sure they looked to see that it didn't happen on a Christian holiday or a Muslim holiday. There's no doubt
absolutely.
In my mind. Yeah, absolutely appalling.
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about, ye old double standard, and also this propensity from the ultra left, you know, as we say, mind that your mind is so open, your brains haven't fallen out.
Absolutely. Finally, Trump says there is no pullout from Afghanistan. He made quite a significant statement yesterday, didn't he?
He most certainly did, and he said that he's left the door open to an eventual political deal with the Taliban. Now, I heard the screeching of brakes when I read that. I was like, what? In fact, I said some other words, but I can't repeat them on nice, friendly family radio. But he said that his instinct was to pull out because this war has killed thousands of U.S. troops and has cost a fortune in U.S. taxpayers' money. In fact, it's run into the trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But he said that the consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable, saying that should there be a vacuum, terrorists would instantly fill it. Now, I think we need to remind the president that the Taliban aren't exactly going to be singing Kumbaya and braiding each other's hair. The Taliban are possibly the proponents of some of the worst terror in Afghanistan.
Absolutely.
And he said that basically America is not there to build nations. They are there to be killing terrorists. So I think that he maybe needs to review this foreign policy decision. And he has said that a single-minded approach would extend to U.S. relations with Pakistan. And even though several U.S. administrations have been criticized for links with the Taliban and for harboring leading jihadists.
Absolutely fascinating. Time is 5:27. That was Rolene Marks with the Israel Report, brought to you by the Blue Agency.